Welcome back to Panoramic Outdoors Podcast, and we're sitting here with prolific Manitoba angler Dylan Beck. Dylan's been a part of the Manitoba fishing community for many years, and he's going to join us here today to go over some fishing techniques, some tactics, and just life advice in general, I guess.
I'm not the guy that's going to give life advice.
No, you got the best life advice. How's it going, Dylan?
Good. Fantastic. How are you guys?
Not bad. Good. Good. So always good.
Able to join me in the hotel room.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty fancy room. It's too bad we couldn't set these mics up on the edge of the...
In the hot tub?
Yeah.
And you just came north here from down south. You're sturgeon fishing?
Yeah. I just spent the last 3 days on Rainy River up close to Baudette, Minnesota, fishing for sturgeon. Unfortunately, I only caught one. I was the only one caught the whole trip.
Fortunately, you're the only one to catch one the whole trip, though.
It was a big one.
Nobody deserved it more than me. Yeah, it wasn't super huge. It was only 51 inches,
yeah,
which is still a pretty big sturgeon compared to, I don't know, more sturgeon than anybody else
has
ever caught.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I know. I've never caught sturgeon, period. Never mind a fish that big, so that's pretty awesome.
You see one coming to the red every once in a while on a pickle rig on about 45-pound mono and...
Yeah, Trilene XT.
Yeah,
it's about 15 years old.
So you've been at the fishing game for a while. You live in Gillam.
Yeah, I've been fishing for about 45 years. No, I'm 30, and so I grew up fishing my entire life, basically for as long as I can remember. Living in Gillam now 6.5 years.
Yeah, you've got. You got the outdoorsman background, right?
Yeah.
In your bloodline, pretty much,
yeah.
Right? So Gillam 6 years now. Really been targeting the brookies and the monster pike up there.
Yeah, lots of pike fishing. Spring pike fishing is just my go-to. That's what I look to forward to all year long. What is it now? End of April. Fishing season opens up May 19th, I think. So we've got about 3 weeks before I can get out again for pike and then to the next... Probably 3 to 3.5 weeks. That's all I'm going to be doing.
Just chasing.
Five or 6 days a week.
Chasing
as much as I can, yeah.
That's awesome. So before you moved to Gillam, though, were you as... did you target pike as much as you did? Yeah?
Yeah. Mostly winter fishing, just because I didn't have a boat. And tip-up fishing is super easy for pike. In the winter, like, you just go to your natural, you know. In the spring, like, coming closer to the melt, you go to where they're going to be spawning, like, bays, inflow creeks, outflow creeks, and they'll be staging there once the temperature comes up.
Yeah.
And set your tip-ups out, and then hammer big pike, generally.
Nice.
What are you running, just, like, big, like, what do we use? We go down to the...
Like a smelter or something.
Fish Tilaby,
yeah.
Cisco's, same thing.
Treble hook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Run on a quick strike rig, sardines, mackerel, even like I've done burbot before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not as good, but like it's always the best to use Tilaby or sardines.
Yeah. And they smash that, eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Some flashy. Is there anything to kind of stay away from? Throwing down there, like, I mean, we've never really targeted pike too much. Once in a while we've gone targeting pike on shoal or something like that, but doesn't really seem like there's not anything in particular that the pike won't hit.
Yeah, they're pretty voracious. They'll hit anything generally. I mean, I've had really good pike fishing where I'm just jigging a five of diamonds. Number two, you learn Thompson, five of diamonds.
Yeah. That's awesome.
You jig that and they'll hammer it.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Always keep one of them in the backpack, I guess.
That's the classic, the most Manitoba lure there is, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I don't. Pickle rig would be pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Between those two, I don't know if you're a fisherman if you don't have at least one of those in your duck box.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see some stats on that with, you know, how many pickerel rigs and five of diamonds are purchased in the province comparative to, like, other
compared
fishing lures.
Else?
Yeah.
Man, I'm always more curious about this. There's always one log or one rock in the water body that's probably just straight
loaded
hooks, just like rusty hooks from 1960 all the way up to.
There's one spot in Gillam's called Dyke 5, and it used to be, before Hydro built the dams, there used to be like a flowing river, and the pike would go there and spawn. And I guess it's still ingrained in them, even over all these years, that they still go there and spawn. And it's one of the first spots to be ice out. So every spring, everyone from town goes there and just stands on these rocks and casts and catches huge pike. But it's like a flooded little timber area, so there's trees everywhere.
Yeah.
And I was just talking to a guy 2 weeks ago. He said, yeah, like, I can't remember, 7 or 8 years ago, the water was so low, he could walk out there. And he said, I picked up, like, probably $2,000 worth of spoons and hooks and everything. Yeah,
man.
Not exactly a place a guy wants to go for a little quick dip, though.
Exactly.
So when everyone's, so it seems to be a community thing then, people go out and fish big pike up north? No?
No. It sucks to say, but Gillam's full of meat hunters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Everyone wants to go fish and fill their freezers.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's only, people will go out and fish Dyke 5, but they're keeping any fish they catch, they're keeping.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, really, eh?
It's a catch and kill town.
Okay, yeah.
There's the walleye fishery's not too bad up there, though.
It's pretty good in a couple spots, a few spots, but it doesn't, like, nowhere near as good as the Red River.
Yeah.
Or, and it's northern fishing. Like, ice fishing is pretty garbage.
Is that right?
Yeah. Except for, you know, the last half hour before sunset.
Yeah. Got to put on a few miles on the sled or something
to
go find them.
Yeah.
Was that a game changer for you moving north? Yeah.
Like, how so?
Like, in your fishing?
The fishing? Yeah. Well, definitely the pike fishing is awesome, totally worth it, and the brookie fishing is just world class.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Whatever, I couldn't care less about walleye.
Yeah.
I grew up fishing walleye.
Yeah.
6 million walleye. I don't really care. But like the pike fishing and the brookie fishing mostly is just amazing.
Yeah, you're pretty much right at the end of the road there and getting into brookie country.
Drive almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, yeah, nowhere else in the world you can have a drive through spot where you're getting 22s. Consistently, and we're pulling away from 17s, 18s because they're too small.
Yeah, that's cool. It's still a pretty good hike for you guys to get into your.
Yeah.
It's a good area, though, right?
Yeah. It's like a 45 minute walk or, you know, a 20 minute quad ride.
Yeah.
Toward the one good spot, the best spot.
So, yeah, you're looking
secret,
at a couple miles.
Secret location.
Yeah, top secret location. A lucky hole.
Yeah.
It's
not as good as the spots you fish with the helicopter. Those are a lot better. Like that river I fish tops out, I'm pretty sure. I've never caught anything over 24, and like where you were fishing, you got 25s, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, access is definitely the biggest issue up there. So fortunately my, career lets me, wander to some of those prime fishing locations.
So yeah, I've never fished for like a stream rookie, and so if you latch on to 25, is your rod just screaming at
it's
that
ridiculous.
Point
ridiculous
yeah
there's nothing you can do, like it's but they're not like it's they're not going to tear 200 yards upstream, they're just going to bulldog down in the water and you can't move them.
I had
one actually tore probably I don't know at least 30 to 40 yards of line off.
Yeah.
In like right when he latched on. And I was running some pretty, quite a bit of a lighter line and tackle on my fly rod. And needless to say, he broke me off way out there. But it's
probably.
Yeah, from my perspective, it's one of the hardest fighting fish.
For sure.
Yeah, because when you bring them home, I look at them and it's like, that is a fish. That thing has shoulders on it. Like, you can tell that it's
absolutely
built for fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're in the char family, so they're like the lake trout, Arctic char, brook trout. They're built not for speed. Like, they're just bulldogs. They just go down and they're just muscle, pure muscle.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. Like, you know, you get a lake run and it peels off. You know, it'll take 40, 50, 60 feet of line, and there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Different species, different attitudes, I guess, or
I guess that's where having a good reel comes in, eh? If no, you don't think so?
No. I use, when I brookie fish, like, if you're going to spend money on fly fishing, spend your money on your rod and your line.
Yeah.
And I generally say, like, your reel's just there. Unless you're saltwater fishing, your reel's just there to hold your line.
Okay, yeah.
Because even if they strip line, they're not going to take 200 yards or 100 yards. They're going to take 20, 30 feet.
Like, you don't need, so they're not going to heat it up too much.
I was thinking ice for Lakers. Like, because I know when I've had cheap reels on fishing.
Oh, ice fishing, yeah. Not fly fishing.
No, totally yeah.
Ice fishing for Lakers, you need an expensive reel with a good drag. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that thing catches and then...
And you're hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Snap.
See you later. And that's another thing. Like, you can use cheap stuff, but I generally try not to because, like, you never know when it's going to be the biggest fish of your life.
That's true. Yeah. That is very true.
Isn't that how all the great fish stories are made?
Yeah. I've lost some of the biggest fish in my life.
Yeah.
Never seen them. Had them on, though.
Yeah.
Monsters.
I don't like taking that chance.
Yeah.
And same thing, like, always sharpen your hooks.
Yeah.
Always, like, check your knots.
Yeah.
Because who knows when that next bite is going to be the biggest fish you've ever caught.
So even when you're rebaiting a hook, just give that big head a tug or that
fly. Always check your knots. And if it takes 10 seconds to sharpen your hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or even to retie.
Retie, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you check the line, too?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Your leader. Always.
Yeah.
Like I said, I told you guys earlier, when I'm north, I don't have satellites. If, like, I'm in the garage, and I'm, like, all sharpen hooks all winter.
Like, I mean, that sounds like a little bit of a sociopath, but...
Yeah, but it's worth it. And even, like, most of the lures I have, I always take the stock hooks off and put aftermarket hooks on, put better hooks on.
Yeah.
What brand would you say?
Gamakatsu.
Yeah.
Is one of the good ones. I mean, there's... Well, actually, most of my bigger baits have Mustads on them.
Okay.
Just because they're quite a bit cheaper than Gamakatsu's.
Okay.
Yeah.
But still just as strong.
Yeah, a little stronger, probably a little sharper.
Yeah.
So you buy an X-Wrap, you're going to take that treble hook off.
Yeah. Any Rapala lure ever, I take the hook off because they have garbage hooks on them.
what do you use to sharpen your hooks? One of those.
I got one in the suitcase here.
Really?
Yeah.
Just one of those, like, generic sharpeners, or is it?
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called. It's basically like two chainsaw files.
Oh yeah.
Two round chainsaw files.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it's called. With a little wooden handle.
Does the job.
Yeah. Does the job perfect.
Cool.
Good enough that it's sharp enough to pierce my ears.
Yeah. Anyone out there's wondering, want to put a face to Dylan that doesn't know him, your kind of claim to fame on the Uncut video there, Uncut Angling.
Yeah.
What was the name of that video?
It was somebody I used to know.
Yeah, you guys did a music video.
But still to this day, my dad doesn't believe I actually did that.
No way.
It's Photoshop. It's camera trickery. It's not true. Like, no, Dad. Yeah, I actually put all those hooks through my face.
maybe he's just protecting himself.
How many hooks did you have in your face?
Eyebrows, nose, lips, ears.
My God.
I don't know, 6 or 7.
And
a whole bunch.
You're married now?
Totally married.
Was that the...
I wasn't.
Did the music video seal the deal for her?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It's funny, before me and Aaron and Jay went and filmed that video, I met Tess that night, the day before we were leaving. And then I went fishing and filming with Aaron and Jay. And then as soon as we got back, I went back to Tess's place. And
just full of holes.
Basically not showering for a week.
Nice.
Smelling fishy.
Yeah. That's still good.
Yeah, she's quite the avid fisherwoman also.
Yeah.
Eh? She
loves fishing, loves hunting.
Nailing the brookies too.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Generally outfishes me.
Dylan Beck Guide Service.
Yeah.
That's what I always say every time me and the old lady go out fishing. Well, who's your guide?
Yeah,
the outfishes me.
Yeah. You must have had a really good guide.
Yeah. Exactly. Awesome. So, spring pike, you're usually fly fishing for them? If you want to bounce back to the pike
situation. I would love to always be fly fishing for them. Sometimes I don't, just because I hate fly fishing in the wind. And then I'll toss line wraps. But, yeah, fly fishing for pike in the spring is, like, so good because they're generally pretty lethargic. The water's still cold, and you can, like, they just let your fly drop right in front of them. Slow it down, speed it up. You can do anything you want.
So you're kind of sight fishing them.
Yeah.
When you're totally going after them.
Like, always trying to. The water up there is a little bit tea-colored, so I can't see them from a huge distance away. But if I see one, I can cast right to it.
Yeah. Big advantage.
Yeah, huge advantage. Good polarized sunglasses. I would always recommend that.
Yeah.
Anytime you're fishing.
What weight of rod are you using on them?
10 weight.
10 weight.
10 weight rod with floating line.
Is there a particular rod company that you?
Sage.
Sage, yeah.
Sage or Loomis.
Nice.
It's pretty much all my rods.
Yeah.
A little bit pricier, but you get what you pay for.
Yeah. Seems to be the story with a lot of stuff in the industry these days.
I think 4 or 5, 9 or 10 or 11 weight Loomis rods, and I broke one. I took it out. I was out by what's that town? Barrie, Ontario.
Yeah.
And I was out muskie fishing. I hired a guide and went muskie fishing, and I was fly fishing the whole time. And then the rod tip wouldn't come apart, and Tess's brother's wife's sister's husband tried to pull it apart with me and just snapped it. And I contacted Loomis and like, oh yeah, that's too bad. Here's another brand new rod.
No way.
Oh, wow. Yeah, just send me another rod. So that's awesome. Definitely get what you pay for.
Yeah, that's good to know that something like that messes up a expensive rod that they got your back on that.
And like, it's like casting between an ugly stick and, you know, $400 sink card rod.
Yeah,
yeah.
Definitely, you can feel the difference.
Yeah.
But well, it'd almost be more important, like I feel like the fly fishing is more of a finesse, like kind of cast than.
Not when you're pike fishing. It's not like when you're pike fishing, you're just hawking a huge fly out of a boat. It's not like river fishing where you need to mend.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. And
but you still got to have a loop, and you still have to like.
For sure. You have to keep your loops tight.
Yeah.
And I mean, get your fly out there.
Yeah. But it's not like. When you say river fishing, I think standing on the shore of the Red River and just
two-handed. I mean like stream fishing where
absolutely.
Yeah. Where you have to, like, if you're dry fly fishing, you have to mend.
Yeah.
And if you're, like, if your fly is going faster than the foam, then that fish is not going to bite it.
Yeah. So when you say mend, you mean, like, pick up your line so it doesn't trail.
It's hard to, like, I can't demonstrate it right now, but everybody else can see it.
Put a video on.
Yeah.
And
but definitely like, sorry,
you're running streamers then, or what are you running
for pike? When I'm pike fishing?
Yeah.
Basically like anywhere from 4-inch to 10-inch streamers.
That's
and bucktails. Yeah. And so, yeah,
that's a big,
the heavier rods help to cast that, and also super weight forward line.
Yeah.
So you want your fly line to be like super weight forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Made for casting.
When we were, when I was fishing in BC last fall for those spawn and chinooks, we had shooter tips on.
Oh yeah.
That made casting super easy.
But that's like Skagit tips.
I don't know.
Skagit tips, yeah. It's Skagit. Sounds about right.
Skagit.
Skagit, yeah. Where it's interchangeable tips on the fly line.
No, it was just like a weighted, weighted strip that was, tied on there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it just, you're just roll casting, and it just
shot. Oh, so you're spake casting.
Shot the fly.
Yeah. Right out, so you do like one of these
and
then just throw it out.
He was using a switch rod. Yeah. I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's spake casting.
Yeah.
And that's a totally different ball game. I've never done that.
No.
I don't know if I could.
You don't think so?
I don't know. It looks like something. I mean, sure, if I practice enough, you eventually learn how to do it.
I don't know. It wasn't like I found I would like toss the fly out like a regular fly and then just bring it up, roll cast back upstream to try and hook one. So
super interesting, something I would love to do eventually sometime in my life. There's a lot of other places I'd love to go fly fishing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The options are endless in Northern Canada, that's for sure.
No, not even Canada. Whatever Canada.
You were saying you went to Hawaii and bonefish for a while.
Yep. Caught a couple bonefish in Hawaii. That was super cool. Missed a whole bunch more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chase, you'll like this because Dylan was explaining how you have to set the hook on a bonefish, and it is pretty much the opposite of everything we do in our life. So, do you want to explain how you have to set the hook on these things?
Basically, hold your rod tip down, and if it moves up even an inch, you're not going to hook that fish. Like, just strip the line in, hold your rod tip down. Don't even lift that rod tip even an inch.
Really?
Yeah, just straight strip set. Which is so...
Oh, you're strip setting on...
Yeah, so opposite of...
Crazy.
...what I've ever done.
Yeah.
Because usually I'm like, rod, as hard as I can set that hook, I'm setting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely going against anything instinctual for us.
Yeah.
Like, I know when we're ice fishing, if you're in shallow water, it's dangerous to stand over the hole.
Because you're getting out of the face.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody's going for stitches.
You sound like... That's happened before?
No. I don't think it's very close, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Always wear your sunglasses.
Yeah, always wear sunglasses. The tent. Yeah. Even in the tent. That bone fishing is pretty crazy though. I watched a couple.
It's super awesome. Like the one that I did hook and land, it wasn't even that big of a one, maybe like, I don't know, 5-6 pounds, if that. And it just gone.
Really?
Like 150 yards.
No way. Gone.
See ya. Nothing I could do. And then I got it, reeled it in, and then gone. Another 75 yards.
Wow.
Straight back up. And that's when you need an expensive fly reel.
Yeah.
Something with a good drag and something that can hold a lot of line, like 200 yards of backing.
And it's salt water too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you're saying you can't even lift the tip an inch, is that because it'll spook the fish?
It'll spook the fish, and it just changes the angle of your hook set.
Okay, gotcha.
And like, so you just,
yeah.
I don't know, bonefish, their mouth is on the bottom of their mouth.
Right.
And so like when you lift, it pulls it out. My guide explained it to me. I can't remember.
Gotcha.
But like you just strip back. That's it.
And it hooks them in the bottom jaw instead of the top.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And it was when I was in Cuba and I was catching tarpon, and their mouths come up from the bottom. They're totally opposite from bonefish. I bet you I had like 20 bites before I hooked one because I was doing the same thing. And nobody told me. Nobody explained it to me. And finally, like one other guy was fly fishing. And he's like, man, what are you doing? I was like, I don't know. I've never done this. He's like, do this. And then I started catching. And I was catching like 15, 20 pounders.
That's wild.
It's pretty cool. Crazy. I mean, they're not huge. They were like that big.
Yeah.
I don't know if the viewers can see this or not.
Yeah, no, we'll Photoshop that in there.
Yeah.
You're saying too, your guide in Hawaii was like next level.
He was the fishiest dude I've ever met.
Just like spidey senses for the fish.
Oh yeah, like I thought I had pretty good fish eyes, and like he would be even 20 yards away, he'd be like, 3 bonefish, going left, right. I'm like, where the heck are they? And like he'd be like, 100 yards away, there's a bonefish.
No way.
Oh yeah.
It's crazy.
He's just crazy. He's like, just look for like a green mark going across the coral. But he's also been doing it for 4 years.
Yeah.
That's his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bring him north and get him to chuck.
But he also goes like
Does he go north?
He'll do trips in Alaska guiding for salmon and stuff, and he does trips on Christmas Island.
Nice.
And yeah, like that's his whole life.
So he's got to figure it out, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got it made in the shade.
That's not bad.
Living in Hawaii and getting for bonefish every day. How much worse can it get?
Yeah. That'd be too bad.
Except when you get guys like me and you see like 12-pound bonefish and I screw up the hook set.
Yeah.
And he's crazy. It's like $600 a day for him. And he said there's one guy from Seattle books him for the entire month of February.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he just like, all the guy wants to do is catch a 14, 15 pound bonefish. That's all he's after.
The guy that books him? Yeah.
Yeah. For the entire month. He'll give him like, once a week, he'll give him a day off where he's like, okay, I can't fish today.
Jesus. That's crazy.
Must be nice to have that kind of money, eh?
Yeah. So that's like $18,000
yeah.
for the month for fishing.
Yeah.
Put that one on the MasterCard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe a panoramic outdoors makes it huge. We could do that one
yeah.
day.
Yeah. Just put on the account. Send us invoice.
Account.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, saltwater fishing is unreal. There's so many. My number one trip I would like to do fly fishing is doing rooster fish off the beach in like Waha Peninsula.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
But you're saying that might not happen.
Yeah, because of Zika virus. Well, not in the next 4 or 5 years, but after.
Yeah.
We got kids and stuff.
After you repopulate a little
exactly.
bit.
Exactly. It'll take a lot of getting in shape. Before I do that.
Yeah, is it a trek to?
It's, well, if you want to do it off the, like, you can do it out of the boat, but that's, I'd rather do it off the beach, and, but that's, like, you're either on a quad or you're just walking down the beach all day, and then you see one, and you sprint as fast as you can, and then cast at them.
Really?
And there's about 99% chance you're not going to catch it. The guys will fish 2 weeks straight and not see anything, or not catch anything.
Wow.
And, or they'll come bite, come look at your fly and gone.
Wow. Would you just camp out there then?
It depends if I do it with buddies or if I do it with my wife. Because if it was up to me, like, I'd just rent an ATV and sleep on the beach
yeah.
for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But I don't think my wife would be into that.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty nice beach to sleep on, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
So that's even like... That's like elk hunting almost in a lot. Like, you'd be lucky to draw back on one kind of
for deer. Sure. It's to the point where it's not fishing anymore. Like, you're hunting that fish.
Yeah.
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 So, do guys eat this? It's a rooster fish?
Rooster fish.
Yeah. Guys eat this, or?
I don't know if they do or not. I think it's, there's not a super ton of guys that fish for them. And if they do, it's probably guys like us where, you know, that fish is so majestic and awesome that, you know, they're not going to eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once in a lifetime kind of deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Target it. I've seen a couple things on Instagram. I can't remember who's catching them. But they're pretty wild looking fish. They got that, I guess, why they call them rooster fish, because they got that massive.
That huge curl.
Yeah.
And that big dorsal fin, yeah.
Yeah. Pretty wild looking fish.
Yeah.
So that's what you're looking for kind of when you're.
Yeah, targeting. Right now that's number one on my bucket list.
Nice.
And then probably after that is Golden Dorado, and then GTs in the Seychelles, and then tarpon in Nicaragua, and taimen in Mongolia.
All kinds on the
list. Sounds like
yeah.
you got a list.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
big time.
Yeah. And how's that work on the home front? Is she on the same page as, maybe?
No.
No?
She, like, oh, yeah. Well, she would totally love to do it, but we have this agreement. We took one trip. She'd love to go to Europe and travel and do sightseeing and stuff.
Okay, we're back from a quick commercial break.
No, zero sponsors.
Yeah, sponsored by AFU Outdoors, Marine River Sherman Group.
That's us.
So.
We've had a request.
Yeah. Minor request to skip off topic from the fishing standpoint. And Dylan, you're a bit of a all around outdoorsman.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff we don't touch on with you. You're a specialist in the fishing zone, we'll say. But
we try to touch it all.
But you also get into some bird hunting and big game hunting and
yeah,
stuff like that too,
for
right?
Sure. I mean, that's one of the biggest things I miss about living in Gillam is I miss bird hunting.
You usually try and get out for a deer hunt every year down south,
yeah,
if you can, though.
Yeah, I go shoot a couple deer on my property with my wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, we ran into you this fall.
Yeah, we were going to sight in the rifles.
Yeah.
And, like, as soon as I seen you, I was like, that's Chase's brother, for sure. She said, don't stop. Who's Chase? I'm like, you know who Chase is.
Yeah.
Who's Chase's brother? Well, it's Tristan.
Yeah.
You met him also.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tess.
Yeah.
Usually under shady circumstances,
yeah,
it's always dark out. There's a 40-foot bonfire or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I had Tyler in the truck, too, so that was...
Yeah.
It was funny. That Mars Hills is...
It was crazy that day.
It's,
like, there must have been...
It's like the Civil War.
80 almost. Guys out there sighting rifles.
Oh, my.
And that one group, like, they had young kids running around, and they were all hammering beers.
They had a pit fire.
Yeah.
I remember one time sighting in rifles out there, and we had just finished shooting and went to go check out the target. And out from, like, this bush trail... These, like, dirt bikes come in and start ripping around the pit we were just shooting,
yeah,
in. And you're like, oh, my God.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Even, like, that day, there was two young kids came on. They had, like, tiny little skidoos. And they came up to us, like, you guys sighting rifles? I'm like, yeah. Like, why are your parents letting you drive your skidoos around this place when it's, like you said, sounds like the Civil War out here?
Yeah. It's quite a well-known area,
yeah,
to
for sure
sight in stuff, too. So, I don't know what's going on. One of our buddies.
And the rifle range is just like a few miles down the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to pay that membership.
No.
One of our buddies literally seen a guy there shooting like a, I think it was like a 50 cal or something.
Oh,
one
it was
day.
A 50 cal.
So
and he,
just,
had a, he had a broken arm.
Yeah.
He was rocking this 50 cal.
He had a broken arm,
yeah,
and he was still shooting a 50 cal.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. That's dedication.
That's
not something you want to be on the wrong side of, that's
no,
for sure.
No. Especially at Mars Hills.
Yeah.
Anyways, Dylan wants to hear the elk story here. I'm not sure how quickly you can tell this one.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you want to hear? Exactly?
Well, I don't even know what this story is, so
oh,
give me
well,
the Coles notes.
I don't know. We last year was our first year with hunting archery elk. We all drew for an area in the Inner Lake there.
Yeah.
And the reason we went there is... We'd seen some elk in the area previously to that, and we wanted to kind of expand our hunting range, and it was close enough to home for me to go.
For sure.
And with the kid and stuff.
Yeah, you took Decker out there, didn't you?
Yeah, he came out to set up camp with us. Yeah, him and Jody. So that was really cool. And camp was amazing. Like, the overall experience out there was unreal.
It was hot.
Very hot. Besides,
yeah,
that, it was like 31 some days. Yeah.
It was unreal.
Two hot times, but.
Like in where we camp, like zero shade.
Yeah. Like the camp spot was nice, but not ideal for camping in 31 degrees weather.
Also not ideal for hunting.
No.
No.
When you're trudging through the bush.
Yeah. Oh, we had days that were put on like 12 miles to chase an elk around.
Yeah.
But we had a lot of action there. The first night I got into them, you and Jamie were somewhere else, and hiked around, eventually found a spot that looked good, and had, I think that's, I had the most action that night.
Yeah.
You
were trading bugles.
Yeah, trading bugles with two different bulls to start, and then it was just one bull, and another bull snuck in on me. I didn't see him, but he obviously seen me because he
was like the satellite bulls, or
we, I don't think we were hunting a herd there. It was just
like lone rangers.
Yeah. So we didn't, we
was
didn't
still pre-rut. I think they were,
oh, okay,
they were figuring each other out still kind
of. Yeah. So kind of what they do in the pre-rut from what we know is they start calling back and forth and then just to see size each other up for,
yeah, yeah,
when the action starts.
Figure out who's swinging the biggest dig.
Yeah, exactly. So I had one come in, and like I said, I didn't see him. He spun and just crashed through the bush, and there's like a very distinct sound of an elk with large antlers running through the bush. It's just, you hear
crash
antlers and crashing,
room,
yeah,
yeah.
And then had a cow sneak in on me, and I didn't have a thermocell at the time, so... I'm swatting bugs like a mother out there. Awesome. Yeah. And so this elk,
in your sweat.
Yeah, just elk is bugling at me, and then all of a sudden I see these two ears pop like above the willows just in front of me. I'm like, oh man, there's a cow there. And it's any elk tag, so.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it's our first time, so I was like, I'd pop a cow probably for sure. If I seen one. And didn't end up calling that bull in. Walked out at dark, which I was prepared for mentally, but once you actually walk out at dark through that thick bush.
So you're a couple miles in
already. So disoriented.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, and yeah. Like, I was bushwhacking all the way in and trails and then bushwhack over here and then going out. I was like, okay, I'll just bushwhack right to the road. And then you're walking and there's just like a wall of trees. It's like, all right.
Because that's just like inner lake bush.
Yeah. And there's like no trees taller than 10 feet there, and they're growing 2 inches apart kind of thing. So, not ideal for that. So the next morning, we went back to that spot.
Yeah.
And probably like 2 or 3 calls in, we had that bull bugling again. And wasn't coming in, same situation. So we were going after him. And we seen him on the trail when we hit the trail. There's like a quad trail that runs east-west there. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of snuck back into the edge of the bush and we headed towards him and eventually got within like 50 yards of him. He kind of went quiet until we got right up to him and blasted a bugle, and we were right on top of him. And swirly wind day. Our buddy Jamie there, he was really bushwhacking through the bush towards him.
He was doing the double pincher there, so he was pincer. He was coming around the one side.
Trying to flank him?
Yeah. And he was actually, he said he figured he was about, he was about 30 yards from him. And just felt a bit of a wind swirl hit the back of my neck, and he gave one bark, and he started to run off, and we chased him for a while.
He winded you?
Yeah. And
we were cold, so
yeah. Yeah, so that was the end of that, and then you guys seen a few more bulls that week. And,
yeah.
And then, oh, actually, I took a shot at one.
at a bull?
No, it was a cow. So it's funny story, because right before I went home that time, our original plan was to go up for a week, but you guys stayed up for a week and I came up for a few days, went home for a few days, and then came back out. Yeah. Yeah. And so the first time I went home, I wanted to put a trail camera up on that wall that I found. And
you actually found where they were wallowing?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And we hunted that morning, and I was going home in the afternoon, so I went in, it was like 10 or 11, and I quadded in most of the way until I got close to the area, and went in with my bow, knocked an arrow, and was walking down the trail, and this elk was bedded like 5 yards off the trail, got up, and I had a diaphragm in, so I gave a couple cow calls and she stopped. She's like 20 yards in the bush, like easy judgment, top pin all day on the bow.
Yeah.
And could not have been a more perfect situation.
Were we shooting through brush?
Yeah. Like it was the same thing, that thick inner lake brush. Yeah. And her head was right behind like a brush pile and some willows. So I just snuck along slowly until I got to an opening, and there was like her vitals in this opening, and the rest of it was covered up, and there was one tree that was like an inch thick.
Yeah, like a thumb thick tree.
Yeah. And but other than that, her vitals were completely open. So,
and you hit that tree.
I nailed that tree, man. Dead center.
Totally smoked that tree. Yeah. Totally killed that tree.
Yeah. And like, I mean, she goes. Big lesson learned there, that like even in those close shots, take your time and aim small, miss small kind of thing. But I figured it was a done deal. I remember drawing my bow back and thinking at full draw,
I got this.
This is how my elk season ends right here. And
a little overconfident or just a little bit too excited?
Yeah, I don't. I think I just should have taken just an extra half second to make sure that shot was right where I needed it to be. But it looked good. Heard it hit the tree. And she took off, and I walked out there because I figured she was close enough that if that arrow deflected off that tree, it'll still be in her.
Yeah.
And
still hit her somewhere, even if it's lump.
But no, I hit that tree dead center, and I walked out there, and the arrow was actually rested in the tree because it was like teetered over like a teepee. And
because you cut that tree right now?
Yeah. And the arrow was resting right in the middle of it. Like, could not have pulled
that off.
At least
the arrow was sharp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I went, I knew where she was going. I went after her and seen her again, but just couldn't get a good shot on her.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. But at the end of it, I was kind of, the good thing about it was like, all right, well, I get to come back out here at least. And I was happy to come back out to elk camp.
Yeah.
Because we were having a blast out there and it was
for sure
an awesome camp.
I remember, like, that's one thing when I moved back down south, one thing I want to get into is elk hunting, because I went out with a buddy of mine, Colin, one time, and he was bow hunting, and he said, hey, come with me. I was just going to, like, he wanted me to take video of him shooting elk. And the first night out there, I'd never elk hunted before, and we, like, walked out, and we had satellite bulls all around us, and then the herd bulls were screaming, like, they were, like, 50 yards, and, like, my hair was standing on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was crazy. That's the first time I ever heard that. It was one of the wildest memories I've ever had. Like, God, that's so cool.
It is nuts.
I just couldn't believe how loud it was.
There's nothing in the wild that makes it sound like an elk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was insane.
It's crazy. Like, when he, especially, I don't know how close you guys were, but when that guy, he was like 50 yards from us, and, like, you hear him at 200, gets your blood going, but then you get tight to him like that, and it's just like, oh, my God.
It was, like, the first night there, I swear, to me, it sounded like they were 50 yards away. They could have been 200 yards away for how loud they are.
Yeah.
But it was dark. I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was just insane.
It's funny you say that, because when I first heard that bull bugle, when I was on my own there, I'm like, oh, my God, he's right on top of me.
Yeah.
And then he wasn't coming in. And then the next day when we were out there, he bugled. He, like, sounded like he was in the exact same spot. And we went out.
400 yards
and
away.
We see him. Yeah, he was, like, at least 300 yards away.
Yeah. When we were 50 yards in, you could hear the air coming out of
wheezing,
his,
yeah,
out of his lungs at the end there.
Yeah.
So you still get that high ball, but then at the end it's like a
Yeah. Super cool. It's
crazy.
And yeah, when I moved down south, that's one of the things I want to get into.
Yeah.
Is it? Can you shoot a moose up there if you wanted to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, this moose season. Went out last fall.
Nothing.
Me and Bannerman went out for, I think, 4 days, 5 days. The first night, he had one calling back to him, and then that was it.
Huh. Hmm. And you go caribou, too,
right? Yeah, shoot caribou every year,
yeah,
which is not a whole lot of fun hunting. I mean, you hop on the sled in my garage, drive. It depends how close they are every year. Sometimes they're like, I drive, you know, 40 minutes or 20 minutes out of town, shoot caribou.
Yeah, that's winter season stuff. Eh?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Huh. But that's the best meat I've ever ate. I'll take a caribou over a deer or an elk.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. That's good stuff.
Yeah, you'll never eat anything better than caribou, in my opinion.
Yeah. One of the questions or one of the ideas that I was percolating when Chase was saying you were going to be on the podcast here was, like, you mentioned, like, fishing in Mongolia, fishing in Florida, fishing, like, Hawaii, all these exotic places, but, like, I don't think a lot of people think of Manitoba as a
fly fishing destination.
Yeah,
but
it seems like you've cut your teeth.
Yeah, I mean, you can fly fish anywhere, really.
Yeah,
you can go to Lockport, fly fish for catfish.
Yeah,
and my grandpa was a huge fly fisher right back from, like, the 1950s, 1960s.
Yeah, your grandpa's pretty well known for fly fishing. In the
I have pictures of him from 1986 holding catfish that he caught on a fly rod at Lockport.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So
that's
crazy. He was snagging cats before it was cool to
snag cats.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, well, like, Manitoba has the parkland out west.
Yeah.
With all the trout ponds and stuff. That's all still water fishing. But you can go... The Manitoba Fly Fishing Group They go every year as soon as the ice is off of Hereford. They go there for, and fly fish there. You can fly fish. I always have a fly rod in me anytime I drive from Gillam because there's always on...
Like in you?
In me. In and around me. There's always carp on the... It would be the southwest corner. If you're... Say if you're heading north, the southwest corner of the Fairford Bridge, there's always carp there.
Yeah.
And I always throw a few casts in.
Nice.
Try and snag something.
There's always a couple of people fishing there every time you drive up.
They're on the east side.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah,
yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
They're always on the east side, but there's always carp in that southwest corner.
Yeah. Sorry. It's the way we're situated across from each other. You were pointing southeast.
Pointing the wrong way.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's like, you can fly fish for anything. There's.
I think the cool thing about fishing those brookies, though, is they're not stocked. Those are natural.
They're natural.
Yeah.
And I just, to me, it's world class. Like, they're
for
natural
sure.
brookies, and they're just huge.
They're beasts.
They're on steroids.
Yeah.
And they're aggressive, eh? Like, they're
super
really
aggressive.
Just mean.
And, like, compared to the brookies they catch in BC, they're like dinkers compared to the ones out there.
Like, I'm on a few fly fishing forums, and I post pictures sometimes, and guys are like, man, that's crazy. Because. A big brookie here is 12 inches. I'm like, good for you.
Yeah.
Like, we pull away from 17, 16, 17 inches. Like, no, too small.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got some awesome pictures of brookie fishing. And even in the snow and stuff, snow's flying up there,
was
you're still
awesome.
Catching them.
Makes for great pictures, makes for terrible fishing because my hands were so frozen.
Do you have any tricks for keeping your hands warm or no?
No, like I froze my hands so many times ice fishing stuff. I'm pretty good. Like my hands are super hooped. They're pretty much fucked. Like they don't ever really get cold. But even that day, I know which pictures you're talking about. My hands were frozen that day.
Yeah,
it's just that water is so ice cold.
Oh man, yeah, for sure.
And
yeah, you can't warm them up once you get out of there.
Exactly.
Yeah,
stuck them in my waders. That's about it.
Yeah.
Or someone else's later.
Yeah. But then I just want to keep catching fish.
Yeah. Exactly. I want to stay on. Keep motivated.
So you're using a 10 weight for pike.
10 weight for pike.
Brookies, you're...
6 weight.
6 weight?
6 weight, 8 weight.
Yeah.
Usually Tess throws a 6 weight and I throw an 8 weight just because I've caught so many brookies. Like, once I hook one, I just, like, haul it in. Get it in as fast as I can so I can catch another one.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, like... It stresses a fish out if you fight it too long. So I just like hammer it in, unhook it, put it back. And if it's a big one, I'll take a picture and then catch another one.
That's always a big debate, eh? Difference between catch and release and catch and keep.
Catch and keep, yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, depending on, like you said, how long
how fast
you
get it in.
Yeah, how fast you get in is the survival rate and stuff
for
like
sure.
that.
I mean, just imagine if I... threw a hook in your face and
you had a hook in your face.
Oh well, yeah. But nobody was dragging the end of the line and pulling me around. But I mean, like, it's river fishing. They're not getting barrel trauma. We're not pulling them out of 30 feet. But still, I mean, these fish are so beautiful and we're all conservationists. Like, we're there for the fish and we love the fish. We want to do as least harm to these animals as we can, right?
Yeah. It's crazy. You meet some people that are, you know, kind of like us where, you know, we go, we catch fish and we want to keep fishing that awesome fishery and stuff
for
like
sure.
that. And then there's people out there and
they just want to go and catch and keep.
Yeah. Catch and keep as many as they can and whatever.
Yeah.
And it's no real perspective for conservation and stuff like that. And they love it though.
Yeah.
But they're just like, okay, I'll catch and keep as many as we can until
exactly.
we can't do it anymore.
Fill up the bucket. And then 2 years later, they're like, man, there's no more fish here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember 2-3 years ago, it was when Jay was up and he was filming or doing photos of us with the brookies.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This guy showed up with his wife. Had a string wrapped around a coffee can and he was like whipping this spoon out and he like boom, as soon as he got there, boom, pulled up this big brookie. He's like, you guys got a measuring tape? 24 inches, he's like stomping it in the mud.
No way.
24 inch brookie. He's like, that's a big one. Threw it up on the bank.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he like just proceeded to catch probably 20 or 30 in front of us, just swinging this spoon out.
Spoon on.
Wrapped around a coffee can.
Jesus.
Wow. Five of diamonds it was.
Five of diamonds?
It was. Couldn't believe it. That's a big one.
That was your engagement photos, eh?
Yeah.
You had fish photos for engagement photos.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That was one of the scariest things we've ever done. Like the fish photos were great, but Jay's always wanted to do that one photo where we had the ring on the fish's kite.
Oh man.
Yeah.
So we were in the river and that fish bucked that ring off 5 times.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
my.
Like we were trying not to muddy up the water, and we like, all three of us were sitting around it, like, and just feeling in the whiff. This super expensive engagement ring.
Yeah.
Probably, like, how much did you spend on that ring? Like,
$9,000.
$30,000, $40,000?
I wish I made that kind of money. I didn't spend that much. But, yeah, no, it was a $9,000 wet engagement ring.
Wow.
And, yeah, it bucked it off.
Jesus.
The water wasn't super deep. I mean, it was maybe a foot deep, but it's not super clear. And we're like, all three of us are sitting there muddying it up.
Yeah.
Oh,
get that sail settled.
Yeah.
I remember one of our friends
lost. My heart was just like this the whole time.
Lost a necklace in Lake Winnipeg there. And gone instantly.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And it's like,
there's no way you're getting that back in
Lake
Winnipeg.
No.
Yeah.
No. Heck, I lost 3 arrows this fall and I had a metal detector and I find them.
Yeah, that was in the lawn.
Yeah, that was in the lawn. I can imagine in the bottom of a creek.
How'd you lose them in the lawn?
Well, you know, you get confident. You say, well, I can shoot 80 yards here, no problem.
Yeah.
And then, I don't have an 80-yard pin, but
all of us 20 yards short, it goes straight into the lawn.
Yeah.
Probably on, like, beer number 7 or 8.
Classic dry lick.
Send it,
yeah. Well, there's only one way to find out. What those pictures are like, what's the proper technique for the gripping grin, we'll say, or the what's the good
gripping grins? I'm kind of over gripping grins, but that's like, it all depends. I have a technique when I hold pike. Put your hand
because you look online and there's some people, and I probably
they do shotgun where they like one hand on the tail and one hand on the belly.
Yeah,
and that's like. Makes for great photos. That's how I did that sturgeon.
Yeah.
That's the best way to, because you can't put your hands in this sturgeon gills.
Yeah.
But, like, you guys do great photos with shotgun holds with pike and muskie and stuff.
Yeah.
But I always try, like, put your right hand in these gills and then tilt the head forward.
Yeah.
And try and open up the gills or open up the mouth.
Yeah.
And your left hand, try and get back in the anal fin and hold it as far back as you can.
You're tucking your fingers?
Tucking your fingers back so you don't see any fingers. And that's how you do big fish. Same with walleye. Exact same.
Yeah.
Hide your fingers. And with trout, do the shotgun pose. One hand on the tail. Make sure it's always stable.
Yeah.
Always, like, if you're not confident holding a fish, just don't even take a picture.
Yeah. It's, I mean, taking a picture of the big fish is obviously a little easier to make a nice photo.
Yeah.
So you often don't have issues with that. You get some pretty big fish, but just on the brookie side of things, man, those fish are so beautiful. It's tough to take a bad photo with them.
Yeah, exactly. But there's good photos. There's a ton of guys I've seen fish the same river I am, and they've taken photos, I'm like, yeah, it's a garbage photo. Like, you look like shit. The fish looks like shit.
Yeah.
And then I look at my photos, I'm like, I look fucking good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But no, it's different. Like, there's...
You want to showcase the fish. So
showcase the fish.
Like, some of the environment, maybe.
Somebody will always give you shit if your arms are out.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you straight arm that shit.
Yeah.
But, like, nobody wants to see me. Everybody wants to see the fish. I'm
not
taking a picture of me. I can take a picture of me whenever I want.
Exactly. That photo is pretty much all about the fish.
Yeah, showcase that fish.
Yeah.
Always try and have it square to the camera, unless you're doing something like not...
That shotgun is not square.
Well, if you are like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But now I've taken so many brookie photos. Me and my wife always try and do something different, like have the fish in the water and just take the picture of the fish so you can't see the person, or do something different.
Yeah. Yeah. Do a close up on the fish or something.
Yeah, for sure.
You were fortunate though. You had Jay taking those pictures. Like, he's a pretty talented individual.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say he's, in Manitoba, he's one of the best.
At
least for fishing pictures.
He's getting into hunting now too, eh?
Yeah.
You see that?
Yeah. I think he's quitting JC's media and he's just doing hunting. He's going to be doing strictly hunting now.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Crazy.
I've talked to him a few times and he doesn't really want to do weddings anymore, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah. A little bit too much work.
I think he's partnering with that guy who does bird tail outfitters too.
Paul.
Yeah, Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he seems to be running an interesting operation there too. But yeah, that'd be
cool. Pretty
sweet to see.
For sure.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he just did that big trip out to Thailand, which looked awesome.
Yeah, that did look pretty crazy. And he shot his first turkey, I think.
Yeah, oh,
did he?
Just a couple days ago.
Yeah.
Yesterday or? Yeah.
Yeah. It's better than us.
Did you guys go out for turkey?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
We
had one coming in, but.
Shot a willow.
Messed up. No trees got in the way.
God damn it.
Messed up on her setup a little bit, and he hung up on a obstacle. And it was crazy, though. We scouted. We found some.
Where were you guys?
We were down in, like, Sandylands country.
Oh, yeah.
And
we just drove through there, man. We've seen turkeys like crazy.
Yeah. And we literally seen these turkeys, got out of the truck, and they're like, oh, let's try and call them in. Called them in. These two hens came in. We're like, oh, my God, this is crazy. Come back here tomorrow. So we talked to one of the local farmers there. And he's like, oh, yeah, there's a Tom and a Jake around here. And so we came back next morning. As soon as we get out of the truck, we seen those bunch of turkeys that were on Instagram there on the drive-ups. And they're gobbling like crazy. And then we get to our spot, get out.
Turkeys have their own Instagram profile.
I think you put those ones on Tinder.
Yeah. And there's a turkey gobbling right away. So we're like, awesome. So we go set up, do a couple calls, and he's gobbling like crazy. He's coming in.
Yeah.
And then he just hung up and he eventually took off. But
really?
It was awesome. It was a perfect morning. And we pretty much had every bird in the woods talking to us. We had this.
But they just hung up and wouldn't come up?
Yeah.
How frustrating was that?
It was very frustrating because, like, we thought we had it in the bag. It was like we got there. Everything was just falling into place. We found the turkeys. Turkey's gobbling. And he's coming in and, like, we're going to kill turkeys in the first 15 minutes of our turkey hunting experience, right? But didn't happen. But we learned so much. And we learned a big part of that area that we were in, which was cool. We covered a lot of ground there.
And met some farmers,
met some
friends.
Yeah, got a few more spots to go check out. And it was interesting. Definitely going to go back. And to hear the turkeys gobble in crisp day. It was like minus 7.
And that's
when
all
we got
part
there.
Of the experience, right? Getting out and just learning and expanding your horizons, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, I would. The hunt, in my mind, was a success, even though we didn't kill anything.
Yeah.
Just because it was awesome being out there. We had some good action, but, you know, we didn't.
It's just nice getting out.
I think you might be PETA's favorite hunter, man. I don't know if you've killed anything on this podcast yet.
When do we get to the point where Chase has to kill something?
Between the elk hunts and the turkey hunt, things are looking pretty grim.
It's just nice to be nominated. Kind of.
Is there a trophy for the most experiences without harvesting anything?
Yeah.
Put me up for that one. But no, it was good. It's awesome. Definitely going back.
And it was you two went out?
I didn't go out, no.
Me and Sheldon went out.
Oh, yeah.
So just coming up to an hour here, but I want to touch base with you a little bit on your grandfather. I don't know a lot about him, but he was quite
hell of a guy,
influential in the fishing world in Manitoba, specifically the fly fishing world, right?
Like, I have a framed thing where the first flies that he tied I think we're in 1953 or 1956. And he tied him out on the farm, and he fished his whole life, and he's like, "This is, I want to try this fly fishing stuff." Started tying flies, and then he would go fish the river, catch gold-eyed catfish. He got some walleye in the spring.
Wow.
And he's like, "Yeah, this is something I want to do."
That's awesome.
He just turned it into he's committed to that his whole life.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So he probably wasn't exactly buying bucktail from Cabela's and
no, he was like any deer that he shot, any squirrel that he shot.
Yeah.
He would turn that into fly tying material.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's not like 1950. It's not like these days where you can go to YouTube and
watch
how to tie these flies.
Yeah, exactly.
He was hacking it out.
Yeah, he always he read every book he could about fly fishing, about any kind of fish ever, about how to fly fish for him, and then he just kind of based some flies on that and what he learned, and then invented a bunch of his own flies. It was featured in books, all these his flies that he tied, and yeah, I don't know what else to say.
What kind of flies did he invent? You know,
don't know off the top of my head. I probably did know at one point in my life.
Like a squeaky nipple or something like that.
That's still pretty
and
awesome,
pincer.
Though.
Yeah.
Pincer. Tell that worm picking story again. So we got on here.
how Grandpa.
That's awesome, yeah.
Grandpa just wanted to have worms in his yard, so he threw a bunch of earthworms in his backyard. And then his whole lawn was fucked after that.
Yeah, so worms for bait, right?
Yeah, if you get earthworms in your yard, your whole lawn turns into these bumpy little piles. But his whole lawn was like that. So I'd call Grandpa "Oh, yeah, I'm going fishing. I need some worms." "Oh, yeah." And he'd turn his sprinkler on. He'd go there at 10 o'clock that night and pick worms.
It's awesome.
For an hour and, as many as you want. You need 20 dozen worms for sure in an hour.
Oh, he's got his own little worm farm back
yep.
there. That's awesome.
And you were slaying drama on those worms.
Yeah. Well, it took us a few days, and then we ended up not even using the worms. We were just catching them on crankbaits.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
We caught a bunch. We went and picked worms at Grandma Grandpa's from 10 o'clock till, we stayed there. We picked worms from 10 till maybe midnight, and then Grandma and Grandpa were so pumped. Yeah, they just loved me. So we after we picked worms, we had coffee and snacks with them till 2 or 3 in the morning.
Yeah,
and then we drove to the water hen.
Nice.
And then fished all day.
You drove to the water hen?
Yeah.
Wow.
And
for
drum. Caught nothing. We fished a water hen for 2 days, and then we went to fish Delta Marsh. We were fishing at the mouth of what's that river? White Mud. Fished at the mouth of White Mud, where it hits Lake Manitoba.
Yeah.
We caught a bunch of drum, some real big ones, but it was just not the hard, steady action. We did a little bit of filming there, and then we went to Fairford and fished there for 3 days and just hammered them. It was lights
nice.
Out.
Nice.
And on crankbaits, we were just if you've seen the video, we were just ripping crankbaits behind the boat, and it was boom, 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 boom.
Wow.
Fucking drum, 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 drum.
Sweet. Well, I think we're wrapping up. Do you want to talk a little bit about Northern Lights?
Yeah, I noticed that you managed to get some good shots there with Northern Lights, and I always struggle to get a clear, crisp shot.
With your iPhone?
No, I use the SLR, and
I
leave the shutter open, and then they seem to move, and then they...
The biggest thing is having a stable tripod.
Yeah.
And you just have to play around with your ISO, your f-stop, and the time, sometimes it's only 8 seconds I leave it open for.
Yeah.
It all depends on the lights and if you're close to a city or something, or if you're way out in the middle of nowhere, I would say just play around with it. Jay always tells me drop your ISO and your f-stop right down.
Okay. Yeah.
But I do that and then the lights turn out shit. And then I just do whatever I want until it looks good. So I'm not a super expert on it.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing is stability, and if you have you take your headlamp,
yeah,
and shine it on a known feature, a tree or something, and focus in on that, and set your focus, and then
okay.
take your pictures.
I'm not doing that step, so yeah. That's maybe.
So then whatever the foreground is will be sharper.
Yeah.
And then go from there.
Sweet.
It just takes practice. Like, I've gone out a dozen times taking Northern Lights pictures and came back home and be like, everyone is shit.
Yeah.
Like, all these pictures are shit. They're all blurry or they're garbage. And it's just like experience, practice.
Yeah. Problem is with me, if I was playing around with that kind of stuff, I probably would forget which pictures I took were good and what I had the settings
exactly.
on.
Exactly. And I take pictures with my phone. I'm like, okay, this picture is this setting.
Yeah.
And that looks good. But then, like, you can take a picture with a setting and then Northern Lights change and you take another picture and it looks like garbage.
Yeah.
Because they change so much. Like, they get darker, they get brighter.
Yeah.
And then, even if they look like garbage, you put them in Adobe Lightroom.
Fix them up a little bit.
Play the saturation a little bit and they look amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think lots of the photos out there.
For sure.
Edited.
For sure.
A little bit.
100%.
Yeah.
It was super cool when I went, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, the last time I took Northern Lake pictures, I was out in the middle of the lake, just skidded out into the middle of the lake, and then I was like laying on my belly taking pictures. Next thing I know, there's an Arctic fox from EDU away.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
That's wild.
Super cool, and I tried taking pictures of him, but it was pitch black. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be tough.
Yeah. But that was super cool.
That would have been, if he would have stuck around though, that would have been awesome because he could have had a
little buddy, could have had a new pet. a new cat.
He was a new cat.
Added to my collection.
Honey, look at this cat I brought home.
Man, I remember when we first got Suic.
Your dog.
She wasn't even 1 year old yet. And it was Christmas time. Tess's parents were up, my parents were up. And Suic was just like barking out the windows, losing her mind constantly. And we're like, what the hell is out there? We can't see what you... Next thing I know, oh yeah, there's an Arctic fox eating a caribou liver that's in my slate. It was just like sitting in this, looking up at us, and dog just losing her mind.
Jesus.
Nobody else can see it.
I heard they're one of the tamer animals. Well, maybe not the Arctic version, but some of the foxes can be domesticated.
Super, yeah. It was, I don't know what it is about this past year, but like they kind of have like a migration where they do whatever they want to do. And then, but I bet you I've seen probably 50 dead Arctic foxes smashed by trucks on the roads.
Oh, really?
This fall, yeah.
Wow.
They were just everywhere. And they're like running through town.
It's crazy.
But I think they're at the peak of their...
Yeah.
They're probably in like a 10-year cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, they cycle with everything else. It's I'm surprised to hear that many of them down there because I know their main, like, you hear, talk to lots of the polar bear biologists and stuff like that. Their main food source is like going out on the ice and eating the scraps from
scavenging.
Yeah.
I guess we got caribou liver just hanging around
there.
Oh, and there's like ptarmigan and grouse.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Crazy. So they're feeding on that for sure.
Yeah. It's cool. You ever do any ptarmigan hunting out there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. They taste like spruce grouse.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. Oh, shit. And they're just as dumb as spruce grouse.
Yeah.
But there's flocks of like, sometimes I'll see flocks of like 40 or 50.
No,
alongside the highway and drive right through them.
Ptarmigan was on my bucket list. That's too bad. I wanted to like go pop a couple, but now I'm less excited.
I can bring you a few back if you want. I want to shoot an Arctic fox and I want to get it mounted with a ptarmigan in its mouth.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
That'd be wild.
I don't know if you can legally shoot an Arctic fox or not. Probably.
I think if you have a trapping license, you can.
Trapping license, what? Still $5?
Yeah.
Yeah. Shoot anything with a trapping license?
Yeah, exactly. It's for bear.
That's basically a get a jail free card.
Yeah, if you got a RTL.
You don't even need an RTL. You just need your trapper's license. Shoot 40 coyotes. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Depends where you're at. Because there's a lot of open area and stuff like that down south for coyotes, that's for sure. Not to say, I don't think anyone would ever care about where you harvest a coyote.
Yeah, even if, like, you talk to any farmer down south in the area, you shoot a coyote, get on you.
Yeah. Exactly. They're always asking, see any coyotes? Shoot them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got any last words to finish off the podcast with?
Final thoughts?
Final thoughts?
I'm just really excited to get back on that water slide. You guys going to join me?
Maybe. I didn't bring any shirts, though, so I got to go commando. I don't know if the kids in the pool would like that.
Maybe we can bring the fly rod in there and you can give me a few pointers.
What are you guys doing in there? We're doing fly fishing lessons. Yeah. Get out of here.
Yeah.
See how the water swirls in the hot tub there? Like,
you just got to bend it around.
Bend it. Oh, no, that's cool, man. Been a blast having you on.
Where are you fishing next?
Yeah.
Next?
Yeah.
You guys still got ice up there, right?
Yeah, a whole bunch of ice. I will not be fishing for another 3 weeks. And then I'm going to be doing pike fishing for like every day or every couple days. Nice. Just going out as much as possible.
Getting slimy.
Getting super slimy. Like fish slimy, not waste slimy. Because nobody wants to get a DUI.
No.
Yeah.
Have you kissed some of those things?
Nope.
No?
I do have a cut here.
Yeah.
Where I had to, I don't know. I was holding this pike, and it just, next thing I know, I threw it overboard, and next thing I know, I got this huge cut in my hand, and I ended up, the lodge I was getting at, they had a proper suture kit, but no freezing.
Oh.
I put 3 stitches in my hand.
Nice.
With no freezing. The owner was like, all right, lined up 3 shots of Jack Daniels for me. Boom, 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 down the hatch. All right, I'm going to sew this thing up.
Did it actually help, or was it just the...
Oh, it totally helped.
Yeah?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Nice. Like I was talking the whiskey, not the sutures.
Oh, totally helped.
Nice.
I didn't wait for them to kick in, but
yeah,
you can see that scar.
That looks like you cut yourself. Are you sure?
I was holding a fish. I don't even know how it happened.
You wanted the 3 whiskey shots.
I'll do anything for 3 shots of Jack Daniels.
Yeah. Where are we going to go fishing next? We're going to try and catch some suckers. Does that count?
Yeah, the sucker count's been down. The low water level's down here, that's for sure. Certain streams, anyway.
Just go out to East Shoal Lake.
Yeah.
Up by the church there.
Yeah.
They're running like crazy. Looking swimming. Mostly swimming.
Jogging?
About 90%.
Like jogging.
Went up for a quick jog.
Yeah.
Soccer jog.
Yeah. I wonder if they wear Nikes.
When you cut those things, you take the belly meat then?
Suckers?
Yeah.
I just generally freeze them whole.
Yeah. You freeze them whole?
Yeah.
And you transport them whole?
And yeah. Then
put them
I only use them for catfish and cut bait and cutting up for chum for lakers.
Okay. Because some guys use the belly for the actual bait bird.
For sure. And that's how I grew up. Like, my dad always did that. You know, cut the belly out, throw it in a bag of salt, Ziploc bag, and then we'd use that for laker fish and he'd load up a picker rig with pickle belly.
See what I tell you? So it's like five of diamonds or pickle rigs.
Yeah. With the five of diamonds hanging off the bottom instead of the weight.
Five of diamonds is weight.
Yeah. We're just going to troll pickle rigs tonight. What?
3 5 of diamonds on there.
It's funny you guys talk about like fishing at Aaron's place.
Yeah.
And he always had a char tournament. And the 1 year I showed up and I was like, what did I call it? The Picleo? Picleo rig. And I took a pickle rig. And I just, like, instead of the single hooks on it, I put 2 little Cleos and used the little Cleo as the weight. And jigged that.
No way.
Caught nothing. Showed up an hour late to this tournament.
Yeah.
With my Picleo rig. Caught nothing. Caught nothing on the Picleo rig. I think Jay caught, like, 23. And he only had, like, 30 in his pond.
No way.
Oh, yeah. It was just like, you would catch the same fish a whole bunch of times.
Yeah. Just starve them for a week before you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you want to fish next?
Where do I want to fish next?
Yeah.
You guys got season opener coming up in a couple weeks.
We're going to do Hecla, I think.
Yeah, probably Hecla or somewhere.
Pound Sound?
Yeah.
Fish those sandbars.
Yeah.
Lose the bottom end on the boat.
Yeah.
Oh, you did that?
Not a complete bottom end, but definitely a couple skegs and props that are missing a little bit lighter.
I'm on a good streak. I've gone 2 summers in a row with going through bottom ends.
Nice.
But God hates coward, right?
What about you? You're heading up to...
Me?
Yeah, is Clearwater you're next?
Clearwater's in June. I'll do Hecla before Clearwater.
Hecla then Clearwater.
You could still go to Clearwater right now.
Yeah.
And hammer.
You can see that now truck just went through in Clearwater there.
There was a truck went through on Clearwater?
I think so.
Really?
Unless it was a BS post on ice fishing.
Are you talking about that one that went through in Kenora? There was a truck that just went through in Kenora last week.
Did you guys hear...
It's a Black Dodge?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so that's what it was. So I was like, I'm pretty surprised to see one go through on Clearwater right now.
It was Kenora.
Okay,
and I'm not sure about the veracity of this story, but I heard a Kenora story from the local boys there, where one went, because trucks are going through the ice all the time at Kenora, as far as I can tell, like, because just the way it's all the...
Because there's so many current
currents and, like, the way the winter roads are there. Apparently some guy was driving, I think it was with a skid steer, and he went through, and it, like, sunk to the bottom.
That's generally what happens when a truck
goes through. 100 feet down.
Oh.
And he popped it. And because I guess it happened so fast, he didn't have any air in his lungs when he hit the bottom. And he swam all the way to the top and got through that hole.
That sounds like a Paul Bunyan tale.
I think, I heard that story also, but it might have been from the same source. So
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Was it Sheldon?
No. But yeah.
But you heard that one, eh?
Yeah. I think he would have been
hurt. He sunk that fast that he just got his way to the cabin, popped straight back up.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I heard. So I don't know. I don't know if you guys had heard that one, but I guess Chase had probably from the same source. So.
Yeah.
Who was it?
Just some.
Let's name names.
Name drop.
You. It was Donald Trump.
Let's make this hotel room great again.
Yeah. Actually, the air kicked in.
Yeah, I turned it way down.
Yeah,
I just had to cover off the thermostat.
Just got the remote going there. it's amazing that, the room here is pretty nice, but they got the thermostat from 1982 sitting on the wall.
Built it around the thermostat?
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Let's change everything about this room except the thermostat.
It's way out of the budget.
Thanks for listening, you drunk fucks.
Thanks, guys, and we'll see you again on the next podcast. Cheers.
God bless you.